dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. That war has, of course, many fronts, and one of them, as it happens, is inside the country that poses the greatest threat to the rest of the world, including our own country, by far. That would be the People's Republic of China. Within the People's Republic of China are three captive nations, and now I guess one might say a captive territory, Hong Kong. There's Tibet, there's southern Mongolia, and there's the area known by its inhabitants as East Turkestan. It's called Xinjiang by the Chinese, and it's the home of several million Uyghur Muslims and a few Kazakhs and others, but primarily it's a Muslim Uyghur population that has been brutally repressed by the Chinese Communist Party for years and now is being subjected, according to the recently departed Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, to actual oppression on a scale that arises to the level of genocide. Here's what Secretary Pompeo had to say about the genocide. Quote, "I have determined that the People's Republic of China is committing genocide and crimes against humanity in Xinjiang, China, targeting Uyghur Muslims and members of other ethnic and religious minority groups," unquote. He went on to add, quote, "I believe this genocide is ongoing and that we are witnessing the systematic attempt to destroy Uyghurs by the Chinese party state," unquote.
"We now have conducted an exhaustive review of the facts and made the determination that, the Chinese Communist Party has committed these crimes against humanity, is continuing to try and deny these people, not just the Uyghur Muslims, but other faiths as well, the simple capacity to continue to exist and to create an ethnic set of activities that we haven't seen in an awfully long time. I've referred to this over time as the stain of the century. It is truly that."
I'm very pleased to introduce once again to you all a woman who has personally experienced this oppression by the Chinese Communist Party and whose family is suffering at the hands of the CCP in concentration camps that have been created on an industrial scale by the Chinese Communist Party for this purpose of oppressing and perhaps exterminating the Uyghurs. Her name is Kalbinor Geni. She has been living in the United States for the past 2 years, but her family has been, as I say, at the receiving end of some of this oppression, so she has a deep personal knowledge of what is being done. Her sister has recently been sentenced to 17 years in prison, namely these concentration camps, 10 for simply having in her possession a Quran, the Muslim holy book, and a further 7 years for praying after their father passed away in 2013. She's joined on the program today by Sehun Kim. He is the director of the Captive Nations Coalition, a project of the Committee on the Present Danger China, of which I'm proud to be the vice chairman. And he has been a formidable advocate for the peoples enslaved by the Chinese Communist Party, as well as a very forceful, well, watchman on the wall about what the Chinese Communist Party has in mind for the rest of us. He's been a human rights advocate as an undergraduate student at the University of Rochester and is a formidable young man. We're very pleased to have him with us today, along with Kalbinor Geni. Folks, it's good to have you, and I guess I should say congratulations. It's not exactly a cause for celebration, because what Secretary Pompeo revealed is horrible in the extreme, of course, but at least the fact that the United States government has now officially recognized what is happening to the Uyghur Muslims is something that I think not only should Secretary Pompeo, of course, and President Trump and the rest of their team be commended for, but it is, I'm sure, a source of some comfort to you and your community, Kalbanur, that this long overdue statement of U.S. government policy has now been made. So welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's good to have you and a chance to visit about what's happened here and what we might do with this designation. Welcome.
Hey, everyone. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to be here. And thank you, Frank. Thank you very much for Kim.
We're glad to have you. And Sehud, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Frank, for having me today.
So, Kalbanur, let me just ask you to help us put in perspective what has been happening in East Turkestan for the past, well, decades, I guess, now, but most especially in the recent past, and how that has translated into really genocidal conduct by the Chinese Communist Party against your people.
Since 2016, Chinese government started this concentration camp policy for the Uyghur minorities, not only for Uyghur minorities, all the Turkic ethnic minorities, like including Uyghurs, Kazakhs, Kyrgyz. And this started 2016, and they started like mass detaining people based on the religion and ethnic. And they call a re-education camp. Actually, this is a concentration camp. So far, according to the United Nations and Human Rights Watch, at least 3 million Uyghurs in concentration camp or in the prison. And my sister is like one of the simple example. Like, my cousin sister, she was taken in 2016 in August. And my own sister, Rana Abulghani, she was taken in 2018. Then after 2.5 years, she's sentenced to 17 years. Just for the, because of the praise when my father passed away, and that because she kept the Quran. And this is the kind of like Chinese government using the excuses like the religion to oppress people like Uyghurs or Kazakhs, Kyrgyz in our region called Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. And so far it's like this is only from my own family, my own sister, my cousin sisters, my brothers, my cousin brothers, and my uncles. At least I know like more than 10 people is detained last 3-4 years. And if you ask any Uyghurs alive, if you ask anyone how are you doing, they at least couple of family members taken to the concentration camp or prison. After they take people to the concentration camp, they're using as forced labor, as slaves in the factory. The factory built it in the concentration camp. And then after like years in the concentration camp, they giving just like easily, no like without any excuses, like long-term prison, 10 years, 20 years, and like life sentence to use them as a slave in the prison.
Hold that thought, because we're going to come back to this and other criminal conduct that the Chinese Communist Party is engaged in, and bring in Sehun Kim to talk about how other enslaved people are subject to similar kind of misconduct and mistreatment. We'll be right back with more, with two of our freedom fighters, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back for this special conversation with a woman who can attest from firsthand personal experience and that of her family to the genocidal treatment of the Chinese Communist Party of their Uyghur Muslim population in East Turkestan. Her name is Kalbanur Ghani. She is joined by Sehun Kim on the program, and we'll be coming to Sehun in a moment to give us a sort of broader perspective on what's going on here. But Kalbanur, I wanted, in addition to these horrific sentences that are being meted out and the enslavement of people in concentration camps where they're being brainwashed, re-educated, as the Chinese say, and the forced labor that's taking place either in those camps or elsewhere with this population. There are some other things that are no less horrific, including the forced sterilization of Uyghur women who are being described as baby-making machines by Chinese officials, and even sort of state-sponsored rape that's taking place in the camps and sometimes by placing Han Chinese men in the homes of Uyghurs whose menfolk have been taken to the camps. Talk about that, if you would, please.
Chinese government tried their best to cleanse, just wipe out Uyghurs from this world. Including that all of that you mentioned is first they try to assign the Chinese ethnic government officials who work for the government people to assign to Uyghur families, stay together, eat together, sleep together. This is purpose of that is wash them if they have any religious or any very deep ethnic cultural behavior, they're going to report them and then send them to the concentration camp. And after go to the concentration camp, the women, all the women, according to the camp survivors and then also the news, all Uyghur women who into the concentration camp all forced sterilized and also re-educate them, brainwashed them, you being used as baby making machine, now you are free. This is the Chinese embassy in the United States. They did 2 weeks ago, they announced that in a Twitter, this is a really shameless tweet ever I seen. They say thousands of Uyghurs women, after re-educated, they are not baby maker machine anymore. They had free thought and then free idea. This is not the way that you making people robot machine, and you after you're forced sterilized in a concentration camp, and then shamelessly you announcing yourself what you did to the world. Well, what you did to the Uyghurs, you announcing to the world.
Right, and this is the point that I want to come to with you, Sehun Kim. The degree to which this mistreatment of a population is now so egregious, I'm happy to report that several of senior incoming Biden administration officials have agreed with Secretary Pompeo's designation of this conduct as genocide. Tony Blinken, the incoming Secretary of State, and Janet Yellen, the incoming Secretary of the Treasury, both in their confirmation hearings, agreed publicly that what we're dealing with here is genocide. This creates an opportunity to, it seems to me, raise awareness on a bipartisan basis about both this set of crimes against humanity in particular, but also others that the Chinese Communist Party has been engaged in, both inside China, inside these captive nations, but also elsewhere around the world. Talk a bit about the work that you've been doing, some of which, by the way, was applauded, I'm happy to say, by a marvelous blog post, China Uncensored, that you personally and people like Kalban Urgundi and others are now working to try to raise awareness about.
Well, thank you, Frank, for having me on here. It's a huge honor. Like all the other shows that I've been in, this is probably one of the most important conversations that I could ever have. In terms of the Uyghur situation, or as we call it, the East Turkestan situation, we believe that this issue will have not only a bipartisan support, but a generally strong push from the American public, as the awareness is growing ever bigger day by day. And I think that's probably one of what's going to be the feeding the bipartisan support, at least in Congress, and I would guess with the incoming new administration. And from what we hear, this is actually echoed positively by almost all sides of the aisle, not just on a bipartisan issue, but even by those who may have doubted it, doubted the information in the past. So that's another great news that we have. So I think also I would like to note that the appreciation, though, for Secretary Mike Pompeo for what he has done, like meeting Calvinor in person, along with the rest of the Captive Nations Coalition about a little bit over a month ago, was probably the most touching factor. And it was an honor and privilege by all of us who has been advocating for this issue for him to designate this the day before his term was over. So, and I would like to also add in that at the end of that particular meeting with the Secretary Pompeo, I remember Secretary Pompeo just looking at Calvinor and after hearing her story, of course, saying to her, "My wife and I will be praying for you." And that was a very touching moment. And I believe that the designation of this of genocide for this horrific events that are going on for in this Turkestan and elsewhere was really echoed with that very simple but a profound statement of solidarity. And I believe that that was meant in the most heartfelt manner. And I believe that such approach could at least be an inspiration for all those who are already supporting it in a bipartisan, whether it be a bipartisan manner or on a regular civilian manner, whatever it may be. I think this is the type of spirit that we could all follow. So we are also pushing for that with the Captive Nations. Yeah.
Yeah, and let me just say, in addition to your appearance on China Uncensored, Calvinor has been featured prominently in a powerful new film by Jordan Allett, a very distinguished filmmaker, a short film called Stolen and Silenced, the CCP's Genocide of the Uyghurs. You can find it at our Committee on the Present Danger China's website, presentdangerchina.org, also on YouTube, and I strongly recommend it. I think you're right, Sehun, that Secretary Pompeo's meeting with Calvinor, hearing her story, hearing from the other captive nations in our meeting with him, unquestionably contributed to his decision as one of his last acts in office to make this designation, and really commend him for having done so. So this brings us to sort of their concluding point for both of you. Unfortunately, the genocidal oppression of the Uyghur people and other Turkic minorities in East Turkestan is but one example of criminal behavior by the Chinese Communist Party. It is, of course, among the most egregious crime against humanity. But there have also been countless others in terms of what they do to their own people, their totalitarian, you know, police state control and oppression, their use of the COVID virus, the CCP virus, I think it's better described as an instrument for attacking the rest of the world, including, of course, our country and the loss of 400,000 Americans. The smuggling of fentanyl, the economic warfare, the theft of intellectual property, the interference in our election here in 2020, all of which, it seems to me, and I think to the two of you as well, but I want to hear from you about this, really argues for designating the Chinese Communist Party as what it is, a transnational criminal organization. Very quickly, if we could, Calvinor, could you talk about what that might do to help the people of your community if such a designation were to be made?
From my individual perspective, our people hope. Of course, first thing is still like this international society, including the United States government or the United Nations, will be give more pressure to the China, then close down this damn evil concentration camp, release these are millions of people, including my sister, uncles, or my cousins. And second thing is like give back that justice and treat us fair with like Chinese ethnic people. And definitely the Chinese government was the evil regime power in this world. And just because of our like minority ethnicity, because of our religion treating us less than animal last 4 years. And but still this world and this big organization like United Nations still keeping silencing and listening our screaming and then just looking at our tears but not doing anything.
Yes. Sehun, very quickly, we're almost out of time. Your thoughts on the designation of the Chinese Communist Party as a TCO?
Well, just to put it short, I think Kalpana put it very beautifully, that it means giving an actual voice to the overall voices of those who've been advocating for human rights and really giving at least a pathway of freedom for those people who's been oppressed under the CCP. So I think it'll be also a morally right thing to do for our generation. And I'm even going to go as far as to say that it is a challenge that we must take, all of us must take and uphold for ourselves, for the next generation, so it does not get repeated again.
Thank you to you both. Kalpana Nurgeni of the Uyghur Muslim community in East Turkestan and Sehun Kim, the director of the Captive Nations Coalition of the Committee on the Present Danger of China. We appreciate so much your courage and your clarity and your freedom fighting. Come back to us soon, please, with updates. And we pray that the Biden administration will join the Trump administration in designating the Chinese Communist Party as guilty of genocide and take the step of designating it as a transnational criminal organization in response. That and more we'll be discussing in the future. Thanks for joining us. Next up, we're going to talk with Zach Voorhees about the latest in the cyber warfare of the social media against the American people. That and more straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's a pleasure to say we are joined by Zach Voorhees, a man we've consulted with from time to time, a longtime senior software engineer at YouTube and its parent company, Google, from which he resigned in June of 2019 as a whistleblower. And thanks to his partnering up with Project Veritas, he made available to all of us information, insights, documents, and, well, warnings that we needed to know about what that particular big tech operation was about and how it really manifested similar sorts of tendencies and ominous capabilities to others with whom it seems to be conniving in that part of our industrial space. Zach is very generous with his time, and I'm pleased that we've got two segments with him to sort of catch up in this new year on a conversation we had, as I recall, at the end of the last one. And I wanted particularly, Zach, to say, first of all, of course, welcome back. It's so good to have you. But secondly, to say some of the things that you've been warning about have taken on an even greater urgency in light of how these big tech companies have been behaving in the latter days of the Trump presidency. Give us your sort of overview, if you would, as to where we stand now with respect to the domination of what we know, what we think, what we can say, what we can do, even to some extent, by those who are now controlling the information space of the United States of America.
Thank you, Frank, and thank you for having me back on the show. Google wields a lot of power. And what we saw in October of 2020 was that the top YouTube commentators on Trump's, that I could call pro-Trump, about 30 of them were purged, sort of like a digital ethnic cleansing that went on. And Google chased them off of YouTube and, you know, scattered them into a disorganized mess, and they had to regroup, and they had to start using different video platforms that had to mature at the very quickly. And what was interesting was that Google set it up in a certain way where they didn't ban anyone really that on the conservative side. I mean, they were banning some people, but they were kind of toning it down and letting the big players stay if they played nice. But then on October 15th, 2020, they just like opened up the trap door and they all just fell through. And they didn't have a mature platform that they could go to at that time It would take a month before Rumble and all the others started like really picking up the slack.
Now, I assume that you're leaving unsaid, but that it is, as the Soviets used to say, no accident, comrade, that this was done in the middle of October, several weeks before the presidential election of November 3rd.
Right, yeah, 2 weeks before the election. So, you know, they did this so that the commentators would not be able to rebuild fast enough for their audience members. And I was part of I organized a lawsuit against Google to get an injunction so that they could restore the these accounts. But I got blocked by an Obama judge at the district level in California, and I got to hand it to Google. They know how to play a game of chess. They made everyone sign a terms of service that said that in order to sue Google, you had to sue them in California, and they owned the judges. So you go to district court and we didn't get a favorable ruling. The judge wouldn't even hear the evidence. And then we had to go to, and now we're figuring out whether we want to actually appeal to the Ninth Circuit.
But this was in federal court. This was not a state court matter.
We went
at the district court level. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Zach, this was not the only step that they took, as I understand it, to try to interfere with the elections, whether it's Google or whether it's YouTube or Twitter or Facebook. How would you characterize the degree to which things like we've talked about before, Robert Epstein's warnings of the manipulation of access to information, not just blocking people, as you've described now, but shaping what people see. A prime example, of course, was the suppression of information about Hunter Biden's laptop in the immediate run-up to the election. But how did that play out, as you see it?
Right. So Robert Epstein, he did a study. He's really highly credentialed psychologist, was the editor for Psychology Today. And he did an experiment where he had people that were undecided on an issue and then gave them a search engine that was rigged in either direction, either one opinion or another opinion. He found that he could take a 50-50 split and then change it to a 90-10 split in any direction that he biased the engine at. So that's kind of the groundwork of what Google's been doing with the election results, and that is that they've censored all the information and made it so that the mainstream media complex gets their stories prioritized. Even if you're not looking for a story, like let's just say you're just trying to find information, they're going to insert their stories into the search engine so that you click them and become influenced by what the mainstream media is saying.
And the thing that's so impressive about this is what Dr. Epstein established, even if you're just, number three or four on the first page, let alone a second or third page down, it can make all the difference how those search results are taken aboard by the user. Is that right?
Right. And users have this expectation that the search engine results are organic. And instead, what they're given is a highly refined, processed search results that are rebiased towards the global's perspective. And this is where we find ourselves today now with the election. And as a result, people don't get the full picture, because if the right-wing view is on page 15, then it might as well not even exist at all. And what's even more frustrating is that Google was able to figure out if the user using it was liberal-leaning or right-wing-leaning, and if you were liberal, it was giving you a reminder to register to vote. And if you were conservative, it was not. And Robert Epstein actually called this out 4 days before the election, and the New York Post was going to run an article, but then Google got in there, got the New York Post to drop their article. And what they did is they corrected the problem by, you know, making it so that the pop-up to vote, the reminder to vote, was happening for both conservative and liberal. But they didn't do that until they got caught 4 days before the election was supposed to start.
And the question occurs, of course, how many things didn't they get caught at and that were also used to shape this election? And Zach, this brings me to the larger question of, with the advent of a Biden administration, which benefited, I think there's no getting around it, massively from this kind of suppression or manipulation of information. Are we now in real danger that this kind of control of the public square, as it's been called, by a handful of leftist corporations and their, you know, infrastructure can be turned into an instrument of real totalitarian control, perhaps unprecedented, certainly to rival that we have widely denounced in communist China?
I mean, I wish I could say that it's not going to be that bad, but what we're looking right now is the worst case scenario, the merging of a totalitarian technology state with the governments, with Biden's administration. And before, you always had Google as an opposition to the presidency for the last 4 years, but now it's going to be a full-blown supporter with fake opposition to a lot of the things that, you know, that Biden will do, you know. But on his real policies, I believe they're going to be working in lockstep, and they're going to be controlling that information so that the population becomes pacified and accepts with what's going on. Or
is simply oblivious to the fact that it is going on, and therefore not in a position to oppose it. And one of the things I was struck by was that I think it's YouTube that has been removing some of the criticisms that have been placed on some of Biden's videos since he came to office. And here's just another example of how. You're so right, Zach Voorhees, that we're witnessing before our very eyes the insinuation of a powerful force that can determine, not only what we know, but anything that we want to say about what we think we know and have it heard by others who may share our views or may not, but who nonetheless have a need to be exposed to the real popular debate that is supposed to inform our democracy. Zach Voorhees is our guest. He's going to be with us for another segment. We're going to talk next about what do we do about the threats that are now emerging from big tech and the implications in a friendly Biden-Harris administration for our freedoms. That and more with a whistleblower from Google right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are visiting for this segment, continuing a conversation that began in the last, with Zach Voorhees, a very courageous whistleblower who had for 8.5 years worked as a senior software engineer at YouTube and for its parent company, Google. He knows whereof he speaks when he talks about the threat that such big tech operations pose to our fundamental freedoms, freedom of speech, our right to know, our ability to participate in the public square, now dominated by, if not really cordoned off by the Googles and Facebooks and Twitters and YouTubes and Instagrams and so on, in the hands of a relatively small number of well, I guess they call themselves globalists at best. Many are inclined to call them Marxists, but whatever they are, it's seemingly a real mortal problem for freedom. So, Zach, we talked with you just before the end of the year. You gave us a long discourse on the sorts of things we've touched on in a rather brief way in the last segment. I'm anxious to pick up with what I promised we would do the last time you were visiting with us, and that is to get your thoughts about what we can yet do under the circumstances to challenge, to counter, to hopefully overcome the sorts of, well, freedom imperiling actions now being taken daily, it seems, by these big tech firms and increasingly now their counterparts in and enablers that are in government today. Some of whom, by the way, seem to bear a striking resemblance to former executives or lawyers or representatives of these very companies now in senior positions in the Biden-Harris administration.
Well, I think that what's going to be happening next is there's going to be the continued purging of conservative voices from these tech platforms. And what you see now is that they're moving on to other, you know, platforms and other services and other software. So, you know, instead of YouTube video, there is BitChute, Brighteon, Rumble, so on and so forth. Instead of Reddit, which has been infiltrated now by these Marxists, we're going to other message boards and interacting with other like-minded people through that way. The problem is that they're now coming for these other platforms as well. And
well, Parler being a prime example of the takedown of such an alternative to Twitter, right?
Right. And they're now coming after us in any way that they can. Amazon AWS did a shocking move where they kicked off Parler from their servers because Parler wasn't banning certain people that Amazon wanted banning. Now, Amazon has no liability because of Section 230. They are a platform. And so any speech that's hosted on one of their customers' web services, Amazon doesn't have any liability for. So the fact that they're going through and banning Parler from using their services has no functional cause. It's just being malicious and imposing a political ideology onto another company. So I believe that this is what's going to happen, and this is going to ramp up. And the way that we defend against it is we can't say, well, hey, this is something for conservatives, because political ideology isn't a protected class. What I'm now advising people to do that are trying to create alt tech, you know, these alternatives, is to start branding their service as a Christian service. And that way, in the future, when they get banned, they're going to get banned for their Christian values, because Christianity and conservatism has a lot of overlap. And if they're getting banned because of their Christian values, then they can sue for a violation of their protected class and their civil rights, you know, because the anti-discrimination laws. And so this is where I think that we can push back a little bit on big tech as it tries to dominate the entire market, is to use this God-given, well, this gift, this civics gift of a protected religious status, and use it. But there's a lot of interest right now for these alternative services. I was being asked about my thoughts on a alternative for hosting websites, because there's all these sites now that are being taken over by leftists, like, for example, GoDaddy.com, taken over by Google. And what did they do? They kicked off AR15.com because of their radical anti-gun agenda. And so, you know, this is going to be the theme of the game, is that there's going to be a steady encroachment on the services that run the internet. And if you don't fall within the political ideology, you're going to get pushed off and you're going to get marginalized and you're going to get ghettoized into a digital ghetto. And then that whole ghetto gets burned to the ground one day when you wake up and you realize that the account has been canceled.
This sounds apocalyptic, Zach, but of course, witness what was done with Parler. That's no exaggeration. They seem to be trying to claw their way back, and I hope they will succeed. But they're now being subjected, apparently, to investigations by the state that suggests Parler was inciting or used, its platform was used to engage in the incitement of an insurrection against the Capitol on the 6th of January. So it remains to be seen how they will fare. But Zach, just to come back to this point that you made a moment ago, that one might see conservatives taking refuge under the First Amendment's right to freedom of religion. I must tell you, I fear two things. One, there are some who are now blaming Christians for that insurrection on the Capitol, setting the stage, it seems, for a persecution of that faith community in our country, much as we've seen done to, by some estimates, 340 million people elsewhere around the planet at the moment. But the other thing is, if they're going to violate your First Amendment right to freedom of speech, or arguably, you know, freedom of the press, I'm not sure that freedom of religion will fare much better once it too is under assault, as inevitably it will be. Am I missing something in the theory here?
I do. The thing is that you don't have a right to freedom of speech on any platform. There's no law that says that. It's just a freedom of speech by government restriction. And so, you know, the difference here is I'm talking about discrimination. So,
which on a private platform cannot be done.
Right. So, you know, you can't ban someone from entering into a restaurant because of the color of their skin, nor their religion. You know, the left has built up these protections to be incredibly strong to protect religious based, you know, people. And so
some religions are more protected than others, though, it has turned out under these rules, as well as protections about, you know, skin color. It increasingly, when you hear about these white supremacists who are being equated, it seems without exception, with domestic terrorists and needless to say, racists, that there's now increasingly the prospect that we will see them somehow, you know, marginalized in and denied service or denied, you know, the ability to live their lives, for that matter. This is the brave new world in which I fear we're embarked, Zach. And is there anything else in the closing minute or so we have that you would recommend be done in the face of these ominous forces gathering?
I mean, yeah, people are going to get silenced more and more. And what we need to do is we need to start moving off of these platforms and regrouping on alternative platforms. I like Gab instead of Twitter. I use DuckDuckGo instead of Google search. I use Brave. And what we need to do is we need to tell our international you know, partners, our countrymen, that they need to start putting pressure to get Google to be fined, right? Poland is going to be offering legislation that fines Google every single time they censor conservative. You know, if we could do that in the United States, and it doesn't have to be a federal law, it could be in a friendly county or a state legislature that, you know, creates a fine if Google censors anyone because they're a Christian or because of any religious reason. And if you could do that, then that would throw a wrench in the whole thing.
Zach, we are hard out of time. As always, long before we're out of things to talk with you about, I hope you come back to us again very soon. And needless to say, your expertise as well as your courage and clarity about these matters is indispensable to us. So we appreciate your visit so much and look forward to the next one soon. We look forward to talking with the rest of you again on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.